This week, the St. Regis Hotel Group announced the opening of 10 new luxury hotels around the world, calling itself the hotel brand of choice for today's global elite. Bloomberg Markets, the monthly magazine about the financial world, calls itself the only magazine for the global financial elite. So who is this global elite? Our next guest says they work hard. They're not living off inherited wealth. They spend months away from home, meeting at gatherings like the World Economic Forum in Davos, where they form a community that many relate to more than their own country. Is there any harm in that? Maybe. Krista Friedland is a global editor-at-large for Reuters. Her article in The Atlantic is entitled The Rise of the New Global Elite. Krista, first, who are these people?
Well, these people are the people who I think are the winners from the big economic processes that are happening in our age, and that is globalization and the technology revolution. One of the interesting things that economists have noticed is if you look at income inequality globally, it's decreasing because the distance between Western developed economies and developing countries is getting smaller. That's those hundreds of millions of Chinese and Indians moving from absolute poverty into the middle class.
Right.
But if you look at what's happening within countries, that gap is getting much greater.
Well, and members of the super elite, people making billions of dollars, and as you say, traveling around the world rather than seeing themselves citizens of one country, will say that, in fact, they feel they're doing good. If someone has to drop out of the middle class in the U.S., three people may rise from abject poverty in India.
You know, a lot of these people have said to me, I sleep at home only 100 nights of the year. So that's extreme amount of traveling. And what that does mean is that the mindset shifts and you think about things at a global scale. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that's not entirely bad, but I think we also need to be cognizant of the fact that we're maybe not in an age where, you know, remember that line, what's good for GM is good for America? That maybe doesn't apply so much now. I don't think these are bad people. These are hard, you know, generally hardworking, meritocratic entrepreneurs. But subconsciously, without themselves knowing it, they come to believe that things which are in their own self-interest are the things that are absolutely right overall. And I think that that's dangerous because these guys are the people who have huge amounts of money, have a disproportionate influence over politics, but they are not experiencing the world in the way that the huge and right now really hammered middle class is experiencing it.
Well, in fact, you talked to the daughter of Pete Peterson. Now, he's been on the program. He's the son of the Greek immigrant who worked his way up to co-founding Blackstone, the financial services company, and now he wants the U.S. to pay attention to the deficit. But his daughter wants to expose the lives of the very rich. She wrote the book Manny. And what did she tell you about just some of the things that she heard in dinner table conversations?
I think the most astonishing conversation that she told me about was a dinner party at which she said one of the women turned to her and said, 20 is only 10 after taxes. That to make $20 million in a year was actually not that much. Everyone sort of nodded and said, yeah, you know, you're right. And what ends up happening is if you're in the top, say, 5%, you should probably be feeling quite good. You actually end up feeling not that great. And that does actually have consequences for all of us because it means that there is, for example, you know, an intense competition for living in neighborhoods that have great public schools. And that drives up the house prices and makes it harder if you're not in the top 5% to live in a neighborhood like that and get your kids in a good school.
There's also a cocooning effect that you talk about, that these super elite making billions of dollars with an allegiance more to the, you know, their global friends that they meet at Davos than, for instance, their country, really can rationalize bad behavior. For instance, the whole financial collapse, you know, absolutely, you quote person after person saying it's not their fault, it's their, you know, even though they might have made their money on these terrible financial instruments, it's the fault of their cousin who bought a condo when he shouldn't have. I mean, just this incredible rationalization that has endgame in a Democratic Obama supporter who's, you know, one of the super elites, threatening a lawmaker that if that lawmaker raises a certain tax on the very rich, he's going to make sure he pays no taxes at all. He's going to put his money in a foundation, further removing himself from his country.
I did find that conversation very surprising. The particular tax you're talking about is on carried interest, it tends to apply particularly to private equity investors, and it would mean that they would have to pay taxes, the same ones that you and I pay. And I have to say I've been really astonished at the intensity of opposition to that tax. What it says to me is I think there is a real need for a shift in the public discourse. You know, I think it's too simplistic to say, oh, you know, you just need sort of an eat the rich politics. I don't think that works either. And I think you, in fact, do need a sort of politics which is about saying, you know, that's great. We want more entrepreneurs.
And to add to that, you also point out that there are members of this super elite who wouldn't have that same attitude. I mean, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
I think that all of them actually are quite philanthropic, and conspicuous consumption is not that in among the super rich. The thing that's really in is to have your own think tank and philanthropy. But the sense of ties that bind to your own community is weakened just by nature of the businesses that these people are in. You know, I think the president should make a big push arguing that paying taxes is a patriotic act.
But for now, as you said, you have people screaming that they're going to take their money and run, put it offshore, put it in their own philanthropies. And that brings us to Ayn Rand and her character, John Galt, who removes himself from the world to show those people that wanted taxes from him that they're going to collapse without him. They do. What do you think endgame is here?
I think one of the difficulties with addressing this issue is that capitalism is so global right now. And, you know, it's not an idle threat that, you know, if taxes are increased a lot in one jurisdiction, it's actually true that money can move. So it's hard, actually, for laws to bring capital and the elites home. I think ultimately, though, people do want to have a home. They do want to live someplace. And so I do hope that they will appreciate that if the economy overall isn't growing, if society isn't happy, that's not a great place to raise their kids.
Chrystia Freeland, her article in The Atlantic about the rise of the new global elite has sparked a lot of conversations. She's global editor at large for Reuters and is working on a book on the same topic. Chrystia, thank you.
My pleasure.